Ibra di testa, Tonali, gol! Sandro! Meritato! Sandro!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up, guys? Very glad to be back this week. We got some fun things to talk about today, so this will be a good one. I'm sure we're going to have record views for at least the Monday streaming section. But yeah, I'm blabbering. Madison, introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back this week. I missed last week. AJ, out of curiosity, what is our one-day record views?
I don't know, but I will find out tomorrow.
When you check this one.
I actually think that the record one-day views episode is when we qualified for the Champions League, because we like hyped it up in the weeks prior saying we were going to do it drunk. And
we got a lot of people mad at us too.
Yeah, we got a lot of people that were like, oh, so unprofessional.
Professionalism. Yeah.
Like, have you watched any of these? we're just
honestly,
not. Sorry.
It's just a miracle that all three of us have watched the game, to be honest.
It is.
Yeah, but God, why wouldn't we have? Goals, four of them.
Lots of them.
Four of them.
Throw that bad boy on the screen.
Throw it up, man. Throw it up. Yeah, we've all got smiles on our faces for good reason. Look, AJ was the one who predicted that we get a win at the Maradona against Napoli, but even you said that it was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek prediction because everything pointed the other way.
Yeah, and here we are. Chuck, go grab your leash because we're walking the dog right now. Now he's all hyped up.
Wow.
But yeah, no, we fucking embarrassed them in their home yet again. Third year in a row we've beaten them there. You know, it's like, what's new? Not surprised at all. Leao was Leao. He's the reigning MVP. Might just win it again. Who knows? Probably not, obviously, because it goes to the champion team anyways. But this was a game for pride, and we did not roll over. We were going up against a team that's taking the Scudetto from us, most likely taking that MVP award from us, could potentially take Champions League from us, and we weren't going to just lay down and let them run riot on us. So, we had to do everything we could, and you saw what it meant to each player. I mean, even Giroud, who didn't score a goal, obviously, banging that Scudetto patch on his chest. Like, I mean, every single one of them. Salamaker said, like, look, the criticism was pissing me off. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And, you know, Saladana just walking in and doing his damn thing. And you got Liao, big ears, like, love it.
He was flexing for 90 minutes. Like, yeah. There was nothing. Like last season, obviously it was a bigger win in magnitude because of the Scudetto running, and we won that 1-0. Giroud like instinctive finish, and you think, great, that's another one of those one goal games that's gone our way. This couldn't have been any different. If you'd have looked at that, you'd have thought there's one team that's 23 points ahead of the other. It's not Napoli. It's the other way around. That's the way you would have thought about it.
Yeah,
I forgot what I was gonna say.
I'm going to say, I thought Maddie was fire.
I was. In fact, I was thinking about what I was going to say the entire time that AJ was talking. The entire game, the broadcasters were like, oh, this is Milan from last season, and they're finally back, and blah, blah. We would not have beaten Napoli 4-0 last season. I don't know where this Milan came from, but I'll tell you what, I couldn't pick out one flaw from that entire game, except for maybe Giroud having a few misses, but Salamaker's looked great. He'll probably never play like that ever again. Brahim Diaz looked great. Lorenzo is in the mud for saying that is our worst transfer of all time. And you know, the team just is clicking. I did say in the chat that we are not going to score a single goal in the Champions League against them, and I stand by that.
I think you see you take it back.
Madness. I mean, let's start with the starting 11, I suppose, because there were some surprises. Like I think one of them was obviously a false change because of Kalulu's injury with France's under 21s, but the decision to play Kier and Tomori as the centre backs and then Calabria at right back instantly put a bit of fear into me, to be honest. I was thinking Kvaratskhelia is gonna have a field there. Simeone, yes, he's a backup to Osimhen and he's not as good, but he scored the winner in the reverse fixture and he's a very capable backup striker. And then there was what looked like being Bennacer and Tonali in front of the defence, and Krunic in the forward line like he did with Kessie last season in the same game. And then Brahim out wide on the right, which we've all said, like, that's probably his best position, and didn't he prove it? But what ended up being Krunic deeper and Bennacer as part of the forward line, it just worked. Like, it was probably one of his boldest selections of the season, and he got it spot on. So we've got to give credit to Pioli for that. He won the battle of the balds.
Yeah, which, there you go. That's the pod title. I think we talked about that earlier, but yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Well, maybe not on air, but yeah. Doesn't matter. Anyways, we lost Madison for a few minutes, but he will be back, I hope. What were we talking? I just got so flustered when he vanished.
Pioli chess moves.
Yes,
Pioli chess move.
Yeah. Queen's Gambit. Yeah, he is the queen. Yeah, we've been saying Brahim on the right for so long. And it finally happens, and it worked a peach, man. Like, just everything he did was perfect. Huh. That little whoop thing that he did on the first goal, like, this is what I was saying yesterday, was every goal we've been scoring, like, lately hasn't been a good goal. You know, they've been really scrappy, just ugly goals, but you get the job done, and you know, you're happy, you celebrate it. Yesterday, every single goal, all four of those goals, had some sort of fancy footwork, had some incarnation of Mario Rui face down crying. Everyone was just getting wrecked, and each goal was just absolutely champagne football. It's like, I have so many words about this game coming in my head that I can't get a single one of them out right now.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Yeah.
It's a great feeling, man. I love it. It's horrible as a podcast host, because you should be able to say things, but like, as a fan, you're just like,
It's
so great. I mean, like, Brahim was on another level. Even Tonali was incredible. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Krunic. Yeah, he dropped back. I'm just going to describe a box to box midfielder here, but yeah, he was in defense when we were in defensive positions. He was in midfield when we were in the middle. He was up top when we were attacking. I mean, dude, the engine on that guy, like, yeah, he obviously is no Kessie. We all know that. But I think it's fair to say Kessie light at this point. I mean, he was everywhere. He did everything we needed. He was physical. He wasn't fouling too much. Like, he obviously got carded for a foul, and he should have. But he wasn't like he was just pushing people over. Like, he was winning the ball back with skill and hold up play. I mean, the hold up play of Giroud is not being talked about on that first goal, because he held the ball for a long time before he made the pass to Brahim, who then did his fancy little footwork and then over the top to Liao. And yeah, man, on another day, Liao had a hat trick. Brahim had a hat trick.
Salamakers gets a second.
Yeah, it really should have been so many opportunities. Like, honest to God, that could have been a 7-0. It could have been an 8-0.
It really could.
Much better than them in every way. One thing they did that was really weird, because we did concede a lot of corners. I don't remember how many. I want to say it was definitely 10 more, 10 or more. I don't know. You look it up, but
I'll have a look.
At least 10. I know that for a fact. They kept taking them really quickly, and it was like they just spent all
and
week
short as
watching
well. Short corners. And it's
It was like they were watching Liverpool 2019 highlights for some reason. Like, and each time they did each time they did it, both teams seemed shocked and confused. Like, they did it so many times. Why did we never once think they were going to do it again? And it even looked like even their players were like, oh shoot, we're taking this right now.
Yeah.
So it obviously didn't work. And it's funny, because we obviously are the worst at defending set pieces, like, statistically in the league. And I think they're the best at them. Now, a lot of that is Osimhen and his incredible headers and the height he can get. And he was gone, obviously, so that wasn't an issue. But
still, you would say that's what Simeone's strength can be as well. Like, you know, he scored the winner against us that way with a header.
Chow wasn't playing, and Chow's our guy who gets it out of the air. So I don't know. That was poor game plan from Spalletti there, I guess.
Yeah. It was all a bit strange from them. I think, if you're Napoli fans at this point in time, you're not having a massive introspection, because, as Maldini said at halftime, and we'll come on to that little row, you know, they've won the league. Like, this doesn't really change anything in that regard. But with it being a precursor to the two Champions League games, what we've shown there is that they are far from unbeatable. And that's what was said in the build-up to the game. Said, we're going there to show that they're not unbeatable. And now you look at the teams that they've lost to this season. It's Inter, Lazio and us. And, you know, those are the teams that should have really pushed them further than what they actually have ended up doing. But no, it was a massive statement of authority. And the two-goal lead at halftime did not flatter us at all. Like, we were well on top. We had that chance that Teo cut back to Brahim just behind the penalty spot that Meret saved. He fired it across his body towards the far corner. And then Brahim drifting out to the right, as you said, with that little boop move to get through, and Liao making a run off a centre forward despite the fact that he was starting as a left winger. I think that kind of positional interchange has always been our unpredictability weapon. And bonus podcast this week will be about Rafael Liao. We're going to talk about his role and his renewal situation, so be sure to tune into the Substack for that. But yeah, that was a lovely dink finish over Merritt, 1-0, and it felt like we totally deserved it. And then to get the second before the break as well, again, a lovely bit of build-up play across from Bennacer that Giroud did a good job occupying Kim. Brahim dropped his man with that little move inside and then fired in off Kim's shin. Absolute dreamland, really. And then at halftime, rather than feeling like, okay, we're one goal away from melting down here, I just really felt like we were in control throughout. Mm. They never really had a proper sniff, to be honest. Maignan had a quiet night. He flapped at a few shots that came his way, but he kept them out. So I suppose that is what it is. And then third goal was just peak Liao. That is why he should be starting wide on the left. So much space to dribble into. Goes to the byline when previously he's been cutting inside a lot more, and he just backed himself with his shot power to fire one past Meret, who did not have a great game, to be totally honest with you. And then,
why was he wearing a mask? Was it just like in honor of Osimhen?
Yeah. It was a lucky thing, a superstitious thing. That's what they said on BT Sport anyway.
Because I saw Kvaratskhelia tweeted a picture of himself with the mask on pregame, but didn't wear one. So I was like, is this just an Osimhen thing? Whatever, I get that. Like, that's your star guy. So I'm sure they wanted so badly to pull out an Osimhen shirt after a goal, but, can't always get what you want.
Yeah, good Rolling Stones song, that. Also, he's only out for like 2 weeks. I mean,
yeah, he'll be back maybe for the first 3 weeks.
But still, yeah, they did crumble in his absence. There's no two ways about it. It showed how important he is. But as Saatchi said in his column today, I don't think Osimhen would have made an awful lot of difference to what we saw there. Look, he offers something a lot different to what Simeone does. But if you concede him 4 goals at the other end, good luck. And then, yeah, the fourth goal, as mad as it sounds, I couldn't even bring myself to celebrate because I couldn't believe what I'd just seen. I was stood up. I can't remember what I was doing. I think I was grabbing a drink or something, and I was just stood watching it develop. And I thought, right, it'll get stopped at some point. Just never happened. He was in and weaved in and out a little bit, and next thing you know, he's through on goal. Napoli's formidable defense. Well, it has been formidable this season, but it's just funny how we made them look like complete amateurs, and it was a winger off the bench. I mean, Kvaratskhelia was like not even in the top four wingers on the pitch yesterday. that's how crazy it was. But yeah, then that was the fourth goal, and he nearly scored a second with another mental dribble where he was doing step.
I think that dribble was almost better.
It was far better, yeah. And the shot was brilliant at the end, and Meret finally decides to make a regulation save.
That's the stuff that we've all been saying we've been missing for seasons now, not just this year, is like just a little bit of creativity, be it midfield, on the right wing, anything, just a little bit of creativity. And that's all it took to get goals, was someone on the right wing to dribble past someone. I mean, yeah, that was all of them.
That's all it
took.
It's
insane. And, you mentioned not even being able to celebrate, because everyone at Milan Club DC, we all went to go watch it, of course. And each goal we progressed, like we devolved closer and closer from man to ape in the way we celebrated. It was like the first one was like, yeah. And then by the Salamaker's goal, it was just monkey noises all around. We did it. Like, just
tables
fucking
absolute
clowns. Yeah. It was so fun. Losing our minds.
It was fantastic. Look, there was a bit of a strange atmosphere throughout the game for me, because Napoli fans at both ends were protesting. There was like chants aimed at De Laurentiis for the ticket prices for the Champions League, and they decided to not.
Must be their first time.
Yeah. You can tell. Welcome to this game. So it was all our fans that you could hear throughout the game, and it took me back to like the back end of last season when we were taking 10,000 here and 15,000 to the Lazio away and stuff. The crazy numbers, and I think that really helped the players settle into the game, to be honest. But it was an absolute walkover. And I never in a million years saw this coming. And while the easy thing now is to say, how dare we doubt the character of this team, it also makes me feel incredibly frustrated. Like, why could we not get up for Salernitana at home?
Yeah.
You know, it really does make you think, especially with the way that other teams have been dropping points over the last couple of rounds of action, with the exception of this one, really, aside from Inter. We weren't able to take advantage. You know, a serious team should be beating Salernitana at home. We shouldn't be getting comfortably beaten by Udinese. And then you go to a team that was on course to potentially be record holders, you know, in terms of points for the title. We make sure that they can't do that. And we do it with a 4-0 win before we've got two massive games against them in the next fortnight, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we really should be 4 points clear of second place right now. Like, there's no reason we should have got 1 point in March, you know. Yeah. Say what you will about January, which it's like the biggest anomaly in the history of anomalies. But what happened in March, like, there's just no excuse. You know, you could come up with all these reasons, but we made the change. We corrected the issue. And then we just couldn't get goals in. And all of a sudden we started conceding. And, you know, people have been saying, like, after the game yesterday, if we never lost Mike, like, the season would be so different. And there's a very good chance of that, because obviously he was gone all of January for that. But also, if you look at pre-January, we conceded 8 goals without Mike. You look since he's come back in after January, just in his return, we've conceded 8 goals.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been any different. It's literally just the month of January that threw our season away. And this goes to show that, you know, yes, we're not winning the Scudetto this season, but Napoli didn't beat us to take the Scudetto. You know, we beat ourselves. We proved that we are the better team. We are the best team in this league. I mean, we beat Inter earlier in the season. Obviously they beat us again in January. We beat Juve, correct? Did we beat
them? Yeah, 2-0 at home.
Made them look like chumps who should be in second place right now if you remove their deduction. And we were the better team the first leg against Napoli, and then we destroyed
that was our best performance of the season, I think, prior to the one last night, you know. So to do it to them twice, Lazio, we still got to play at home, but the away game was during that freakish run of form. Roma was, you know, where the capitulation that was the beginning started.
But even then, we were 2-0 up for 83 minutes. Like, I mean, we showed that we are the best team in the league. We just could not be consistent for that month, and we just had a crash. Maybe it was because we had so many players at the World Cup that went far and they needed a rest that they didn't get. Maybe there was dressing room drama. Maybe there was, I don't know, all kinds of things. Maybe it was just Tata Rushanu's age finally caught up to him. I don't know. But it shows that it was just that one month and how, of course, it had to be the month where we had 8 games. You know, it couldn't have been. The month where we had 3, you know. Well, it was that month too in March, actually. But
I mean, it was 5 points, you know, at the start of the new year, after Inter beat Napoli and then we won against Salernitana. It was 5 points, and that really is nothing. You know, that can very quickly be wiped out. But it did still feel as though Napoli were deservedly top of the table at that point. And since then, every other team has faltered, and Juve's points deduction as well, to the extent that it feels like they've never really been put under pressure. Other teams, as you say with us, have kind of beaten themselves, and Napoli have been able to play pretty much pressure free because of the stumbling form of everybody else. Yeah, they were on for record pace. They have got superstars, at least within this league, and they are going to deservedly win the title. But I think a result like this suggests that there is more parity than the table looks like, table represents going into next season. Who knows what happens with Osimhen if he leaves? And what happens
and
with
and all of their players. You know, you see Kim is now linked to Liverpool. You see Kvaratskhelia linked all over. Osimhen's been linked to Chelsea, United, PSG, Madrid. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a good chance that they lose all the players that made them this team. You know, the ones that they just brought in. Now, how they're going to spend that half a billion euros they're going to make, you know, there's no reason to assume that they can't.
It never goes as well the second time.
Yeah, you know, that's what I've been saying about our youth project too, is like eventually you're going to get it wrong, and you know, hopefully then they get it wrong much sooner than we did.
Yeah, they got a lot right last summer. Like, you've got to give them the props. They lost most of their key pieces and they've replaced them pretty well. But
I will say, I've never been impressed with Kim, and I know everyone's been saying he's the best defender in
Spalletti
the league.
Spalletti said that. He set him up there.
He said
big
best
time.
In the world.
Yeah,
and I've been seeing that hype from a lot of people on Twitter and stuff, but just look at the league stats. Kim is not even top three in a single defensive stat this season. And that was prior to the Milan game. Mm. He hasn't been this top guy. The issue is they're just not getting any under any pressure. So like the sample size is kind of like whatever, you know, but we showed, I mean, he got embarrassed by Brahim Diaz. He got embarrassed by Salamakers. He got embarrassed by Rafael Leao. Like, is this guy the greatest defender? No.
I think like he's probably been on a par with Rahmani as well, and nobody ever expected him to be as good as what he has. But yeah, to say something like that, of course you're going to hype up your own players, like Pioli's done it before as well. But to go to hyperbole like that, it only sets him up to fail in his bigger game as that was, and he looked all at sea. And it was brilliant. It was brilliant to watch. Spalletti might be feeling a little bit of the pressure. They had a bit of an altercation with Maldini at halftime, which was funny more than anything, to be honest. The reconstruction, or at least Spalletti's version of events, is that he was trying to talk to the referee about why Lobotka got booked in the first half for what he said was just a regulation foul rather than a yellow card offence. And Maldini came into the tunnel waving his arms as if to say, "You're always complaining." And he didn't like that. And he came out and he was trying to speak to him, and Maldini kept saying, you're going to win the league. What the fuck more do you want, basically? And yeah, Spalletti took offence to that, called Maldini disrespectful for trying to talk over him, which is quite ironic considering Spalletti's character. But yeah, that was funny. I just wonder if we're sort of getting in the heads a little bit as well. You know, this battle's going to be psychological as well as on the pitch, and he looked like he cracked a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're not going to lose all 10 games left, and no one's making up a 30-point gap on them. But, you know, they might not look as invincible going forward, and I don't think that altercation had anything to do with it. But definitely this game overall might have been like, it's either going to be a wake-up call and they bounce back strong as ever, or they're going to do what Napoli of past has done and then kind of whimper a little bit like the beaten dogs that they are. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But as far as that little altercation in the tunnel, it's interesting hearing Spalletti's version of it, because when I watched the tape, I saw some people translate it, and it was more he was taking offense to the way Leao celebrated his first goal, the tongue out and the hands to the side thing. And that's why you saw Leao kind of like saying, but like, what are you doing? And Maldini was more like, you know, why are you talking to my player about this? Like, shut up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know which version's true, you know, both can be made up, both can be partially true. But yeah, obviously Spalletti's not going to say, "Oh, I was mad at, you know, the way Leao," so like, you're not going to make yourself look like an asshole in front of the media. You're going to try and put the blame
as much
on
as he's trying
and
to do it.
He's going to be a victim. That's what they do there.
I thought it was dead obvious that Leao's celebration was a bit of a piss take more in towards the critics and stuff who saying that he's not playing with a smile on his face. So he pulled a funny face to be like, "Don't worry about me, I'm fine." Like, he had a smile on his face when he dinked that ball over the keeper. It's a beautiful photo.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that, like, because he hasn't been smiling in games lately, as we've seen. But in the very beginning of this game, before the first goal even, he had this incredible flick on behind his back that went to Teo, and Teo headed it, and it was run and almost a goal. Brahim had the shot and it was saved by Merritt. But Leao was smiling during that. And as soon as it happened, Badair and I looked at each other. We're like, "Oh, he's smiling. He's feeling
on,
it. This is the game."
Extent. Yeah.
Sure enough, like right after he had the goal. But
and then after he did that celebration, Pioli pulled him over and had a word with him and said, "Don't celebrate like that towards their fans." But I honestly, there's no chance that he actually meant to wind up their fans with a celebration like that. I didn't understand the big fallout about it, but clearly Spalletti thought the same. I think that that version of events is probably more accurate. He's like, you know, it's classless or whatever. But you got Politano grabbing his balls towards the away fans after he scored that pen in the first game and celebrated in front of the Curva Sud. It's like, you know, what do you expect? So they were chanting, calling him a son of a bitch and all that. And then when he was going to take the free kick, he turned around and grabbed his nuts towards them. And it's like, you know, you were a bang average player for Inter. Stop trying to create beef with those lot. You know, just focus on the game. You're 2-0 down. Have a bit of respect for yourself. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. That was an interesting subplot as well. And everything, it's not like that's the last time that we play them, you know? So a couple more games, hopefully some more back and forth.
My Twitter bookmarks are full right now, and I'm just waiting after the UCL tie. I wanted to drop them all right now, but I was like, you know what, a lot of them are UCL related, and if I do it now and we lose, then there's some ramifications for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm just waiting, but no, the retweet button is ready.
On a serious note, before we do tops and flops, does that result change anything in view of the games on the 12th and the 18th, or will they be their own things?
It should change it. I mean, I do think this is going to make Napoli definitely focus more. Because ultimately, the game against us yesterday didn't really matter to them, and they probably thought they could take it easy and get away with it. Obviously, once you get caught out early, like, it's really hard to recover. Neither team has come from behind to win a game this season. I mean, Napoli hasn't been behind very much, so, but yeah, it's still a fact. And I do think the quarterfinal, seeing how clear a path to the final is this year, it's definitely going to make them focus a lot more. And we're going to get the best version of Napoli, especially if Osimhen's back. But they're going to get the best version of us. We show up in the Champions League. We clearly show up against them. So I do think a lot of the maybe the betting lines are going to be a lot closer. I think a lot of the pundit predictions are going to be a lot closer. Like, there's no way you could go into that game and not say, well, you know, Milan did just smoke them 4-0 at their home. Like, you can't exclude this event, regardless of how irrelevant it is in the overall terms of the Scudetto race. It still happened. It's still huge for both teams. What side shows up, we'll find out, but you can't ignore it.
Yeah.
Do you think that Napoli can, I mean, for I guess we're kind of going into UCL here, but do you think that Napoli can handle the pressure of the quarterfinals? I don't know if we can, because, like, this isn't Milan from 13 years ago, right?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, they've never been there before. Yeah, in a while. So
we'll see. I think that the games will be an awful lot scrappier than what we've seen in the two league games, which were fairly wide open, to be honest. Like, yesterday, for two teams where 3 points was important, more so for us than them, it was an open game. There was a lot of chances, a lot of corners, as mentioned. I can see the Champions League being totally different because both teams know, you know, like, we know a bad result at home in the first leg gives us it all to do in the second leg, and they'll probably come
that
to
first
try
game
and
might not be very, very good or offensive. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think, like, Napoli's season has been very odd as well, in the sense that the teams that they've dropped points to are either right up there or right down there. They've dropped points like Cremonese when I think Colombo scored the equaliser.
They also lost to Cremonese in the cup.
Yeah, and that's mental in itself, because they had a real opportunity to get some silverware with the Coppa Italia too. But it just goes to show that they're beatable in one-off games, and I guess we'll see what happens in a two-legged affair. But we've got experience doing the home first leg, away second leg thing with Spurs as well. So maybe that'll play in our favour a bit. But yeah, it certainly upset the apple cart a little bit. Man of the match, there's plenty of candidates for this. And I'm kind of hoping that we all pick three different ones. But I'm going to go with Brahim Diaz as the man of the match. I think you can give it to any one of a number of players, but Brahim unlocked the game with that bit of creativity at the start. He was well placed and showed good composure to score the second goal. And yeah, just generally, he was fantastic out on the right, and I've given him a lot of stick, so I'm going to give him some praise that he's due.
Yeah, I really want to say Saladana just so I could keep saying Saladana, but it's got to be Liao. You know, he was the man. He's, yeah, it's Liao.
I want to pick Liao, and I really don't want to pick Salamakers, but I will.
Yeah.
Just so we can all do something different.
Fantastic.
And three wingers. All three of our wingers.
Yeah. That was his first league goal of the season, which
was his first league goal since 2021.
Wow. Yeah, that is madness. I mean, hopefully it's the start of a good streak of form for him, because you know, some players you think they'll at best they'll be a functional player. But when you see a couple of those dribbles from Salamakers, you think there's definitely something more in there. Like we've said the same about Brahim Diaz as well, for the same reason. Like when he has these little flashes of brilliance, you think it's there. We just need to find a way to access it more. And maybe the change in formation back to playing with two natural wingers will help in that regard. But yeah, great performance from him. Flop this. I don't want to pick one, to be totally honest with you. I am going to pick one and people are going to beef at it. But for me, it was Maignan.
I was going to pick him.
Yeah, now it's controversial. It's clean sheet. And I do feel bad doing this because really there was no flop. But he didn't catch balls as he normally does. That's quite literally it. He parried a few of them that could have been dangerous. Yeah, three. And, you know, on another day, maybe they fall to someone who's in a better position, what have you. But yeah, that does feel a bit harsh.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I do think maybe he was sick or something, because he looked a little slow, a little off, and that third, he did a lot of parries. There was a lot right at him that like he could have caught, and they just went straight down. And I know that is a goalkeeper tactic sometimes. You know, you just pat it straight down, and then you know take a little bit of the sting off of it. And he wasn't under pressure with either of those, but still, they were shots that he should have just grabbed. Yeah. And then the third one is a little harsh to criticize him for, because ultimately it was a great save. It was just a save with his face. And honestly, he might have got concussed from that. Like,
yeah,
the rest of the game after that, he was doing a lot of this. I'm like, oh, like he looked out of it. So it's really harsh to say he was the flop when he might have gotten hurt from there. But
also,
you have to pick someone,
It was his fault that he got hurt. The ball went through his hands, you know. You can stop it with your hands if you want, but I'm being way too harsh. I'm not going to pile into him here.
I'm going to pick Giroud because we could have had six goals, but he really messed it up.
He wanted that bicycle kick so bad. He was going to take that one.
There was that first time shot as well when he was in behind, and really the offside flag went up, but at least the replay showed it was level. So he had time to take a touch there, to be honest.
And there was one where he put it just wide.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, that one early in the second half. Yeah, yeah, and it is unfortunate, but situation of the game meant that didn't matter, but it could have mattered, you know. We need to see those end up in the back of the net, because if he's not doing that, he often doesn't offer an awful lot else. But his hold-up play was pretty good yesterday, and his pressing from the front was good as well. Brilliant, 4-0. I never in wildest dreams did I think that we'd be saying that, but props to the lads, and this leads us nicely into the next game, which is Empoli at home.
Was this our biggest win against a top side in like I don't know how many years, but
I'll tell you one stat that was interesting that was tweeted by Opta Paolo. The last team prior to us doing it last night, the last team who scored four goals away from home, 2015. Yeah, four goals away from home against the team that were top of the league was Fiorentina, who stuffed Stefano Pioli's Inter 4-1. wait, I don't know if it was Pioli's or not, but it's around.
It might have been. It was 2015. Yeah, so.
I know they had a meltdown towards the end. It might not have been him, actually. But either way.
It was Spalletti's.
Yeah, it could well be. But either way, now we've had that amazing result. We've got Friday night football to come. And story of our season has been that we've been good in the big games, and we've struggled to follow it up with consistent performances against the teams that really we should be beating. Empoli this season, they're one of those sides that are in the lower mid table. They're not going to go down, and I think that that's considered a successful season for them. But they've only won 6 of their 27 games so far this season. They've only scored 24 goals, which is rate of less than a goal a game. And they're on an 8-game winless run at the moment. Prior to that, they beat Inter at San Siro. So it's funny how that works. But yeah, they've lost 5 of their last 8 games.
Did they beat Juve as well?
Good question. They have beaten so far this season Bologna, Monza, Sassuolo, Cremonese, Sampdoria, Inter. So no, didn't beat
Juve. They lost 4-0 to Juve.
Yeah.
I thought they beat
Juve. I think it's last season. It's last season they beat Juve, or the season before. They definitely won at Juve recently. But yeah, they've lost 4 in a row. They're struggling to score goals. As of a lot of their... What's that? 5 of their 6 wins are 1-0? So that's the kind of result that they'll be going for against us, no doubt. They did beat Inter at San Siro, so they'll take a bit of confidence from having done it already. But yeah, they fluctuated between 16th and sort of 10th, 12th throughout the entire season. And it looks like they're going to stay up relatively comfortably. But that's more so because of how poor some of the teams have been at the bottom. Their main players, in terms of the top scorer, is
honestly,
a player that
imagine
we're actually,
not winning.
We might.
Was that it?
Imagine I know there was not like winning.
Was that the full sentence? Imagine not winning.
Oh, were you stopping because I started talking?
Yes.
Yeah.
I must be like really delayed or something. Imagine winning 8 straight games, only winning, and still being clear.
Yes, that is exactly what they've done. Look, I mean, they've drawn 10 games, which I suppose means that they've picked up points in 16 of their 27 games, and that's not awful. But yeah, they, as I say, they're struggling to score goals. Their top scorer, young attacking midfielder Tommaso Baldanzi, who we've been linked with as a potential replacement for Brahim Diaz. He's actually a boyhood Milan fan as well, so if he was to score, no doubt that would make the headlines. They've got a couple of decent players. I like Parisi. He could be a good deputy to Teo. He keeps being linked. Nicolo Cambiaghi is also pretty decent. He's got 3 goals. They're a young-ish team, to be honest. Top assist maker is Caputo. He's actually 35, so I'll take that back. But yeah, they're just pretty average, to be honest. And we really need to follow up.
Their starting goalkeeper, isn't Vicario injured?
Oh, is he injured?
Will he be back? Yeah, I don't think he's going to check because I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just going to look at their injury record in general. They currently have only Cambiaghi, so it looks like one of their main threats is going to be out, but Vicario should be available, at least according to Transfermarkt. So we'll see, but it would be a bit of a boot. I tell you what, though, we had to graft our bollocks off to beat them earlier in the season. That was when we were 1-0 up, and then we conceded late on, and it was Balotelli and Rebic who scored in added time, mm-hmm. and we won 3-1. But it looked more comfortable on the scoreline than it was. So we know the threat that they have. As I say, Baldanzi is going to be well up for scoring against his boyhood team. I would be sticking with the team as well. I think we need consistency in all of the departments, and I think you've got to consider as well that Benacer and Krunic played together at Empoli. So I think they'll have a bit of added motivation to prove that they moved on to bigger and better things. So I would probably stick with the same team, to be honest. I certainly wouldn't move Brahim Diaz from the right. I quite liked what was going on with the midfield. It gave us plenty of cover as well for the back four. Maybe you could say throw Chiao back in there for a game like this so he can recover his form against a team that are not as proficient attacking wise, but I don't think you change a winning team.
Yeah, I think you keep it. I mean, it's as simple as that. Like, I think a big part of why we dropped off was there was a lot of changing going on, and it really hurts the intensity and the chemistry when you switch players out. I mean, you look at how in sync Teo and Liao are on that left side in the 4-2-3-1, and then you look at the other formations or when the other players were in, Balotore or Rebic or someone else, like, there just isn't that consistency. There isn't that same tempo. So I wouldn't change anything. If our idea is, now let's build on a run, build some confidence heading into the UCL. I mean, there's only one game between now and the UCL anyway. So
yeah, we play Friday and Wednesday. So it's not like normal when it's been Sunday, Wednesday sometimes in the group stages.
So, I mean, I don't mind keeping it the same. I mean, I do think we should keep Krunic there, just give him another time. Well, is anyone going to be at risk of suspension?
Oh, good question.
That I don't know.
Because I think we've got Bologna away after Empoli at home. Mm-hmm. So we've got a couple of games that we should really be targeting, although Bologna are on a bit of a run at the moment, actually. Yeah. At risk of suspension. That's a good shout, because we definitely had three or four players who were near the threshold.
Yeah.
We have four players who are one yellow card away from a ban. One of them's Kalulu, so he won't be there. Calabria, Rebic, and Kier. So you could lose your right side of the defense in one game if both of those get booked.
Yeah.
So that might be something to consider. Maybe you bring Chow in for Friday, and then, you know, you can bring Kalulu in at right back for Bologna, presuming that he's going to be fit for that. We don't know.
When's the next big game? Because I would like to get those suspensions out of the way.
Roma?
I think it is Roma. It is
April 29th.
Okay.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. We've got Empoli, Bologna, Lecce at home. So in terms of what league fixtures fall either side of the Champions League dates, we couldn't really ask for much better.
I'm not too concerned about Kier getting a suspension, because I do think Chow is able to step into that role. I'm a little nervous about Calabria getting it pre-Kalulu's return.
Yeah, me too. Florenzi can do it. We know that he can do it, but we don't know how fit he can stay either, because he's had nightmarish injury luck. I agree with you on that. But hopefully Kalulu will just miss the first leg and be back. But calf injury, can't risk it. We know what happened with Mike. Mm-hmm. Predictions, I'm going to go... I don't think it will be quite as spectacular as the Napoli game, even though it should be. We should be able to put more past them than we did against Napoli. But I think that they're going to come and try and frustrate. Seems to be their way to try and win games 1-0 or just pick up points. And therefore, I think we win 2-0.
Okay, well, then that's what I was going to say. So
you can pick the same. We can both be right.
Yeah, okay, 2-0 it is.
I'm going to say 1-0. Did I lag, or am I still...
No, you're good. Okay, cool. That time. Yeah.
My big prediction, CDK gets his goal.
I think
Friday
it's
going to
be the Liao show again. I think he's going to do it.
Fine.
I think he's on a streak. I mean, he did so well with Portugal, and we'll talk about that on the bonus episode, but yeah, I think he's just in form right now.
Yes, sir. All good. Right, let's do some questions then. As mentioned, bonus episode this week, we're going to be talking about Liao position, future renewal and stuff, so we will respectfully swerve any questions on that. But the first one comes from... comes from Michael Gambino. Is Diaz the answer at right wing until the end of the season? Then we look for an upgrade in the summer. So basically, do we let him go? Or do we sign him?
I say we keep him at right wing.
Yeah.
But I don't keep him.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to keep him. I think Madrid's kind of set on taking him. But yes, definitely play him at right wing. I mean, there's only 10 games left. If he's going to be in form, like, at the end of the day, we're 1 point inside the Champions League spots. Like, we need to play our best 11, whether it's every single player is on loan or not. You know, like, at this point, play to get however far on the table as we can. So keep him at right wing.
Could his performances at right wing have an impact on whether we really go for him to try and sign him permanently? You know, I think if he keeps playing at that level as he did last night, then we might be looking, thinking we've got a solution there for the future, and we might be able to do a bit of negotiating. But all the rumours coming out of Spain suggest that Real Madrid want him back and they think that they can sell him on for more. I personally don't see that. I really don't see how anyone judges him to be worth 30 million, 40 million, whatever they think they can get. I like that our offer might be somewhere around 16 to 18 million because he is still young and there's room for growth. But I honestly think these last 10 games could be decisive. It's like you've had plenty of false dawns so far this season. He was great against Monza. He was great against Juventus at home. Then there was a bit of a drought, and then he scored the winner against Spurs, and then he had that performance last night. But we need a bit more consistency. But it does sound like he's happy at the club and would stay if the opportunity presented itself. So I think it's all still to play for, really, with his future, and I'm sure we'll hear more in the coming weeks. Dre asks, is Krunic underrated or overrated?
Under.
It depends who you're asking. If it's Isaac, then he's overrated. If it's me, then he's probably underrated.
Yeah. Truth be somewhere in the middle? Like, I feel like the...
Probably.
Look, there's a lot of extremist agendas among Milan fans on social media. But I do find people moving towards a centre ground with Krunic where they appreciate that he's actually a very useful utility player. He will never be a world-beating player technically. You know, he's not a Luka Modric clone or anything like that. But Pioli likes him for a reason. He trusts him for a reason. Since he's been here with us, he's played defensive midfield, box-to-box, attacking midfielder, right wing, left wing, full-back. He's played basically every single position. And I think Pioli likes that flexibility. Would I be concerned if he was like an out-and-out starter going into next season? Yes, because I think we need another midfielder. We need another body. But... you know, keep him around. He's happy to be that squad player and to help out where he's asked. So I think maybe he's moving towards just being rated. But yeah, good cue. Juan Melendez asks, the Napoli game, I suppose this is more of a statement, the Napoli game was the best that Tonali has played all season. And he thinks the performance was so good because of the midfield dominance that we haven't seen this season.
I agree.
Game was won in the midfield.
Mm-hmm. Bennacer put a 10 out of 10. Tonali probably a 9 out of 10, if not a 10 out of 10. I mean, I can't think of a mistake either of them made. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was a massive thing that was picked out before the game as well. Like, you know, that their midfield, I don't think on paper their midfield going into this season was that fearsome, you know? Lobotka had been up and down previously, and Ndombele was coming after a disastrous spell at Spurs, and Giesa was on Fulham's bench. Like, I don't understand how, and Zielinski's a top player, don't get me wrong, but I didn't really see it clicking the way that it has. But I think that we saw that Napoli midfield are only good, A, when they're not under pressure, and we put them under serious pressure, and B, when they can keep things simple, and without Osimhen to bang balls up to. And with Kavara being neutralised because he got double-teamed, they weren't able to do the usual things that they can. And they looked limited as a result. They lost the ball so many times in the centre circle just from trying to overrun it. And that's for the two legs.
If Osimhen was there instead of Gio Simeone, I wouldn't have been shocked if they had two goals. I mean, I could think of one, I want to say, around the 6th minute that Gio had really on the penalty spot, and he skied it. Osimhen probably scores that. And then there was another in the dying seconds of the game. They had a counter. They beat, I think it was Kjaer and Tomori, actually, both of them. And whoever had it just shot wide. And I think
that was Lorenzo. Not Lorenzo. The Mexican guy.
Oh,
it was
no,
it was Raspadori. It was Raspadori who went through and he beat Calabria to it. He got in a bit of a muddle, but he should have squared it and he dragged his shot wide.
Yeah. And I think Osimhen cuts in. Out muscles them and probably scores that as well. So, yeah, I mean, they have a good player. Like, they miss Osimhen more than they realized, I think. Well, they probably realize it now, but you know, they won 7 out of 7 games prior to this one without him, so they probably didn't think they needed it as much. But yeah, it was missed for them.
Yeah. Next question, Hossam Diwan. Despite the great result and performance last night, what are your thoughts on purely substitutions? Bringing Origi and Rebic on 60 minutes, CDK on 75, and then bringing Bakayoko on while not giving Chal, Vranks or Adli any minutes?
I have no problem with it, actually. And I'm usually a huge critic of purely substitutions, but we got to take it into context. We were 4-0 up. We weren't going to concede 4 no matter who was in the pitch with that little amount of time left. So,
when you throw out the younger players who need a bit of a confidence boost?
Yeah, right. Why are you putting Bakayoko on?
He brought on TDK.
Yeah, but to bring Bakayoko on over Franks and to not play Adley is like, when are they ever going to get minutes if they can't at 4-0?
Well, seriously, I think the idea was keep everyone healthy who matters. Bring on the people who don't.
Yeah, maybe that's
so. If they matter and you're keeping them healthy, why aren't we seeing them in other games?
I don't know. I've criticized Pioli every week. Like, just because I'm not this time doesn't mean I agree with it every other week. You know, I just.
The Bakayoko thing deserves its own introspection because I really don't get what's going on there. Maybe now we're past the clause triggering and he actually wants to use him, but.
I think the thing with Bakayoko is he didn't leave in January, and I think he made it a point, like, give me a chance, let me fight for a spot. And I think they're giving him that in small spurts. But you know what? That chance I just talked about, that if said Osimhen would have finished, that what's-his-name had?
Raspadori, yeah.
That started with Bakayoko's first touch of the game, which was a giveaway, which we've seen every
single time. It always is. Touch is a giveaway, yeah.
He's really not a good player in any aspect, and I mean, I guess that is disrespectful. I don't mean any. I'm just being honest.
In any aspect. No, but like when he's been brought on in the past, like the Monza away game, we were getting aerially bombarded and he brought him on because he was the tallest player on the pitch then at that point. And we needed an extra bit of physicality that you could kind of understand. You know,
maybe that's all it was. I mean,
but CK like a 4-0? Really? I don't know.
I think it's rest the guys that matter and just, you know, no one gives a shit what happens with Origi.
Franks and Adley don't matter.
In the eyes of Pioli, he ain't getting...
Yeah, so like there's no reason to rest the guys that matter.
The only thing is I don't know.
No, I'm not talking about them at all, though. I'm just talking about the guys who are on the pitch. He took off the ones that mattered, and he brought on guys who are pretty irrelevant, but at least tall. I mean, yeah, I think Adley's probably 6 foot. I don't know how tall Franks is, but Bakayoko's taller than both of them, so... You know, maybe that's all it was. Which is like, yeah, it's more of a defensive change. I mean, Bakayoko is a defensive midfielder. It was just sit back and let's chill. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was an opportunity for the others to play. And I don't know if Pioli heard me say CDK a defensive mid, but I didn't see CDK pass the halfway line once when he came on. He was pretty deep, and I don't know if that was intentional or just because that boy's lost. But
not even sure he touched the ball.
I don't think he did. I'm gonna be honest. I didn't even know he came on.
It might as well like, not have.
I would have brought him on.
I thought he was invisible.
Although
he was invisible because I didn't even notice.
Yeah. Yeah, he was not there.
Yeah, and Origi and Rebic, not really much happened there.
Now because I said Origi will assist CDK's first goal. God, Origi sucks, man.
1-4-0, but let's tear into somebody. Well, the final question, I'm going to throw it out there because it's a name that we haven't mentioned before. Christian Espinoza asks about whether Michael Olise could be the perfect right winger for us and might we make an offer he would cost 30 million. We should have a look because basically we were linked with him when he played for Reading and it was a bit of a rogue one because it's like, you know, Reading, a Huddersfield level team. But he did stand out there as being a good player. Then he moved to Crystal Palace. Seemed to have a good start to the season, but he's got 2 goals, 5 assists this season in 31 games. Not paying 30 million for a winger with that productivity, I'm going to be honest. But he's only 21.
He's 21. Has he been getting called up to the English national team? I'll be honest, I don't know anything about this guy. He's on transfer market.
Under 21.
He's
France under 21, sorry.
I would just love to buy a player who is proven in a position instead of continuing to gamble, because at some point you do have to have some players with the experience on your team, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be Dortmund, where you get to one Champions League final every 30 years and that's an accomplishment, or you challenge for the title once every 4 years and then you sell off your players. Like, that's not what Milan is.
Mm.
So
no, I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Also, I think if we're offloading either one of Macias or Salamak has come the summer, or Brahim Diaz doesn't stay, like, I don't know. I don't know if signing a 21-year-old is necessarily, for all the reasons you said, I don't know if that's good in the construction of the squad. Like, I'd much rather get someone like Asensio on a free transfer who is older, has the big game experience, can play right wing, center attacking midfielder.
Origi has big game experience and he scores in big games.
He does. He's the big game man.
But
he's scoring in the Champions League semi against Inter.
Yeah, he scored in every fucking Merseyside derby as well in the last minute.
Yeah, but we're talking big games only.
Our points deduction for Everton, mate. You're going down.
Dude, they're fucking going down.
Yeah, we might be staying up, so see you at the John Smith Stadium next season.
Sounds like a lovely place. $4 or £4 and 50.
It's our own lager, to be fair. It's brewed by a local brewery. It is quite nice. But anyway, been a pleasure, this one. Really, really happy to be recapping such a massive win. And let's hope that the good form continues. And next week, we're bringing you more smiling faces. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yep, this was a fantastic episode. Obviously, join us for the bonus. That'll be out later today. Special shout out to a listener by the name of Vlad. I won't go into detail, but, you know, you rock. We appreciate you. Mm-hmm. And,
It was great to be back this week. Had to step out for a minute, but I'm here.
Yep, drop us a like, comment, subscribe and all that. Give us a rating on your favorite podcast platform. Subscribe on Substack. The link is in the description. Really appreciate everybody who watches and has signed up to that. Got more exciting plans to come on that front. And yeah, thank you very much for watching, everyone. We will catch you in a week's time.
Ante, ecco l'Ante in area di rigore, Ante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce lo da buono, ce lo da buono, ce lo da buono!